You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Lot to do today, guys. Week 2 of the NFL season starts tonight. The Browns and the Bengals. Yankees win yet again. Mets gave you a panic attack, not because they were losing or won or any of those things, because you thought DeGrom might really be injured, so that was very concerning. But I think the jumping off point today for us, and I can't believe we're here, that he needs a vote of confidence after week one, but that's where we are, Chris. And before I do that, by the way, I'd be remiss to not go around the horn and have pleasantries. So good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. Good morning to you and to Rick DiPietro. I'm sitting here looking at the lines for week two, and I wanted to ask Rico if I was out of pocket for looking at the Jets line at plus 7 as one of my best bets and taking the San Francisco 49ers.
So that's just disrespectful. I mean, now you're just trolling.
Who is it disrespectful to?
Well, to me, I mean, you guys are supposed to be pumping me up this week. After what happened in week one against Buffalo, you're supposed to be pumping me up a little bit. Supposed to make me feel
we'll
good.
We'll leave the pump it up to Chris Johnson. How about that?
Yeah, I'm going to need you guys to do the opposite.
He does it so well with Adam Gase.
I'm going to need you guys to do the opposite of what Chris Johnson did with
Why?
Adam Gase.
He tells you how promising things are. You got an offensive genius running things.
Well, the U.S. Open is currently on television, and I got Woods, friend of the show, Colin Morikawa, and Justin Thomas, both, you know, all three playing right now in the same group. So I need you to lower your expectations on my contribution today. Just lower them now. Get that out of the way.
Okay.
Because I'm dialed into Wingfoot right now. Makes me actually miss doing the show at Wingfoot.
I guess from a sporting standpoint, that's all you got to look forward to, right?
And he's got the Islanders game 6 tonight.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Well, I'm a Rangers fan, Dave, so I just kind of blocked that out. That doesn't exist in my world. That's not in my purview.
I like
it. You know what I'm saying?
I love the way you think.
Exactly.
But come on, stop with the negativity. You got the Islanders game 6 tonight. Can you at least wait till they're done before you pile it all on?
What am I piling on? I'm just telling you right now. I'm locked into the golf. You and Chris are, listen, two of the best in the business. I'm just telling you right now, do the opposite of what Chris Johnson did. I'm not going to be brilliant today. I'm just letting you know that now because I got important things going on today. This is a big day of sports for me, Dave.
This is a big day of sports. We got football. We got baseball. We got basketball. You have a huge hockey game. You got golf. I mean, let's be honest. It doesn't get much bigger than this, right? We are all in on sports right now.
Yeah, I don't know how it does. I mean, honestly, I mean, this is the first round of the U.S. Open in golf. I got game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals of hockey. I got game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA. We got baseball.
Yep.
I mean,
you got Yankees who are rolling.
And I got the first Thursday night football game tonight. It's a must win for Cleveland. Let's be honest. The Cleveland Browns have to win this game tonight.
Yes. If the Browns lose this game tonight, not that it affects us greatly, but you're going to hear panic, and rightfully so, I think, out of Cleveland.
There's something that stinks in Cleveland, though. I'm going to be honest with you. After watching game, it's not a talent issue. I honestly don't think it's a talent issue. I mean, even with Baker Mayfield, man, we're laughing about him, but when he came in that third game of the season, his rookie year, he lit the world on fire. Like, the kid looked good. There's a reason why we put him up here on this pedestal, because we thought that this was the Cleveland Browns finally figuring out their quarterback problem. But it's been all downhill since then. I don't know, man. It's something going on there, and they clearly don't have it fixed. If they lose to the Bengals tonight, like, everybody in Cleveland will be in full panic mode.
Yeah, if you lose at home to, not that home matters all that much now, but if you lose at home to Cincinnati, a team that the expectations are going to be lousy, and your expectations are decent, right? Most people think Cleveland's around a 500 team. If you lose at home to Cincinnati, I mean, you could see the season completely spiraling out of control after 2 weeks.
Well, then it ain't about the coaches, Dave. I mean, this is Baker Mayfield's third coach. At that point, it becomes about the player, right? You can't blame Hugh Jackson. You can't blame Freddie Kitchens. And you can't blame Kevin Stefanski. Maybe Baker Mayfield just isn't that good. Now, I find that hard to believe just because I actually saw it at the NFL level. But, I mean, there's something going on culture-wise, and they haven't gotten it fixed. Similar to what we're talking about with the Jets. There's something going on culture-wise over at Florham Park, and it hadn't gotten fixed. And the guy that Chris Johnson tabbed to get the job done, and Adam Gase, yeah, that wasn't the right direction to go.
Well, how about to make matters worse? And by the way, I know you want to check out today, but you do have a CMT coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. So if you could at least, you know, give us that later
well,
on.
Well, that's done. I already told, I knew it was going to happen today, so I already did that yesterday. That's done.
All right, good. So it's troubling on so many levels, Rick, because the fact that you have to come out and have kind of a I have complete confidence in this guy after 1 week. We're 1 week in, and already the owner of your team has to come out and make a statement of, you know, I completely believe, I have full confidence in Adam Gase. And an offensive genius. I mean, we've watched this guy for now more than a year. He looks like he doesn't know much about offense at all. And I'm not saying he doesn't, but it doesn't look good. And to come out and defend like that, Rick, I don't know, man. If I'm a Jets fan, I am beside myself today.
It feels kind of Knicks-y, doesn't it, with Fizdale? It feels a little bit Knicks-y.
Yeah,
like
very much
a knee-jerk
so.
Reaction to, you know, the fan base and, you know, sports talk radio and everything, just crushing them after week one. And it was not competitive. He should be embarrassed. I mean, Chris Johnson should be embarrassed. He really should. I was actually hoping Canty, talking about Cleveland, would say maybe Baker Mayfield and Cleveland could use Adam Gase down there to help them out. Do us a favor. Maybe we'll trade you Gase for Odell Beckham. How about that? Does that work for them? I was listening to Get Up. I think Santy pulled the sound. I hope he has it. But you don't even have to have an opinion. Like, you can take your opinion of Adam Gase completely out of the conversation and just, I mean, Greeny went through the facts. And, I mean, I was almost like, I knew it was bad, and we've gone through some of the stuff, but they dug deep, man. And it made me a little bit sick to my stomach.
That
Sam Darnold, the future of this franchise, or we thought was the future of this franchise, is, you know, this is what he has to deal with, because it's
bad.
It
should make you sick to your stomach.
Well, we said it when they made the hire, though. We're like, why are you entrusting Adam Gase with the most critical phase of Sam Darnold's career? I mean, the developmental phase for a quarterback, you're talking about the first three or four seasons. You have to make sure that you have somebody that knows what the hell they're doing. And clearly, Adam Gase didn't. Not only from, you know, being a quarterback whisperer and trying to make sure that Sam's trajectory is pointed in the right direction, but making sure the overall team around him is going in the right direction. Like, making sure that the infrastructure surrounding your quarterback is such that you're going to be able to get him to realize his potential, and that clearly isn't the case. But we didn't think that Adam Gase was capable of doing that just based off what we saw of him down in Miami. Let's face it, the best year that he had with the Dolphins was the first year where he had the least amount of influence in terms of what the overall roster looked like. And then they decided they were going to make him the czar, and he was going to be control of not only coaching the team but personnel, and that was just a disaster. And they had to get rid of him, and they had to turn it over to Chris Greer to get things going in the right direction. But for me, Adam Gase was never the guy that you would look at and say, this is the guy that I want to build the foundation to develop my young quarterback. He's never been that guy. If you want to get him a veteran quarterback like a Peyton Manning, like a Jay Cutler, okay, cool, that works. We've seen him have success like that as an offensive coordinator. But as a head coach, developing young quarterbacks, come on, man. Let's start with the shenanigans. He's not that dude.
And do you remember?
Which is why it's so baffling that Chris Johnson would have chosen him. And that's a few weeks after the guy got fired from the Dolphins. It's absolutely ridiculous. And to come out and give him a vote of confidence after the first game of the season. You know what that is, guys. It's not just them hearing the noise from, you know, sports talk and from the fan base. There are people inside of that building in the organization that probably aren't sold on Adam Gase either. And this is the owner trying to do everything that he can to keep it all together. But it's already falling apart. We've seen it. We saw it up in Buffalo. It's a wrap.
Yeah, but I told you that last year. It wasn't just the players. I mean, it was the coaching staff, too, that had questions about Adam Gase. In that week one performance, he did himself no favors at all. At all. With
well,
how
they
bad
were
that
awful. Yeah, but here's the thing. A vote of confidence? Like, it's one thing to make a mistake.
It's his first hire as the owner of the
team. It doesn't matter. What do we talk about all the time? If you're running a company, you're the CEO of anything, when you make a mistake, you're going to compound it or you're going to admit, you know what, I made a mistake and maybe move on. And I'm not saying he has to move on now, but to come out and double down. And you remember what Dan Graziano said to us yesterday? He said, Douglas and Gase are tied at the hip. So this idea that they're going to just move on from Adam Gase and keep Joe Douglas, he's not even sure that's the case right now.
Yeah, but I mean, the initial mistake was letting someone that's never made a decision like this hire your head coach. That was the first mistake. So what is he going to do now? In his first decision, you know, after finally getting control of the team from Woody, his first decision, he's just going to, after 17 games, just admit his ineptitude? You'd like to believe that was the case.
No, I don't think you have to admit your ineptitude, but I think you could come out and say something like, you know what, our expectations are that we're going to be better than that, and that's not acceptable, and Jets fans and the Jets organization is not going to stand for that, instead of he's an offensive genius and I have nothing but confidence in him.
Yeah, but how would Chris Johnson know otherwise? That was the reason why he hired him. He fell in love with him. Whatever Adam Gase sold him, he fell in love with. And maybe it's just me or us on the show. I have a different definition of brilliance and guru. Usually when someone's a guru in something, like you actually see tangible results. Like when the Islanders hired Lou, who's one of the best to ever do it, and Barry Trotz, who's great at what he does, you saw instant results. The Islanders went from the worst defensive team, not same players, worst defensive team in the league, to the best defensive team in the league. That's what gurus, people that are brilliant, do when put in situations. Like all those guys that they take off the scrap heap from other teams in the AFC East, and you put them on New England, and all of a sudden they can play?
Yes.
That didn't magically just happen. It's because you got a great head coach. There has been nothing but regression since he took over. I'm telling you, listen to Santi, do you have that sound of Greeny?
Yeah, he has it. All right, here's Greeny this morning. Here it is, Greeny this morning from Get Up. Here we go.
So the acting owner of the Jets thinks Adam Gase has a brilliant offensive mind. To that, I reply, what on earth could possibly have given you that impression? There is certainly no evidence that it's true. What there is, in fact, is overwhelming evidence that the exact opposite is true. Consider that in no season that Peyton Manning was not his quarterback did any of Gase's teams ever finish in the top half of the league in scoring. The last three seasons, in fact, they finished 28th, 26th, and 31st. That's in a 32-team league. In 17 games under Gase, the Jets have scored 33 touchdowns, and they've punted 93 times. They have scored on 24% of their possessions. That's the worst in the league. They've gone three and out on 44%. That's the worst in the league. Their average drive has gained 23 yards. All of those are the worst in the NFL. But wait, there's more. When the Jets acquired Le'Veon Bell, he had averaged more total yards per game than any player in history ever. Under the brilliant offensive mind, Bell is 27th in the league in yards per game. And there's one more, just so you know, this is not just my fandom talking. Under Gase in Miami, Ryan Tannehill was so bad, the Dolphins traded him for mid-round draft picks, and they chipped in $5 million just to get rid of him. Then in his first year in Tennessee away from Gase, Tannehill had the fourth highest passer rating in history and led the Titans to the AFC title game. Those are all facts. They happened. And they beg one big question, Christopher Johnson. If the coach has a brilliant offensive mind, what in the world is he doing with it?
And that, of course, is Greeny, who's so funny with his statements. You can hear him 1-2 here on 98.7 every weekday. But it's a fair point. I mean, at what point do we get to see, Rick? At what point do we get to see this brilliant offensive mind? Because as you've heard, how many times did Greeny say, last in the NFL? And that's worse than the NFL. That's last in the NFL. That's worse than the NFL. I mean, brilliant offensive mind. We've had 17 games into this, and I'm yet to see this brilliant offensive mind.
Dave, I mean, that's not opinion. What Greeny, I mean, he's a huge Jets fan. Nothing he said was opinion-based. That was all factual information. That was the great research department that GetUp has digging deep and coming up with all those numbers. The fact that they punt on 44% of their offensive possessions, you know, they go three and out in 44% of their offensive possessions, that doesn't scream brilliance to me. It doesn't. And I don't care what the quarterback situation was last year and everything else. I mean, we had people calling. You want to talk about offensive gurus and guys that, you know, can get the best out of the talent that they have? Let's go back to, and I love this guy. I think we all can agree. Kyle Shanahan's one of the best in the business.
One of the best.
Yep.
When Jimmy G got hurt and Nick Mullins took over, you had CJ Beathard, and then he got hurt, and then Nick Mullins. Chris Canty, remind me, did we take phone calls from people? Because Nick Mullins looked so good, did we take phone calls saying that they should try to trade for Nick Mullins?
Yep. Don't you remember the Giants should try to go get him?
We absolutely did.
Was a big thing.
That's what
I'm talking
about. We absolutely did. Yeah.
We took those phone calls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because that, I mean, again, that's
if Adam Gase is an offensive genius, what is Kyle Shanahan? What is Andy Reid? What are the actual...
Sean McVay.
I mean, what are the actual... Sean McVay, right? What are the actual offensive geniuses in this league if Adam Gase is considered an offensive genius?
I mean, is that a legitimate question?
Because no, I mean, it's a rhetorical question.
There's no way Dave could be serious with that.
And it would bother me to no end if I was a Jets fan. If I've watched 17 games of this, it almost looks like it couldn't be worse than it is. And the owner comes out with a vote of confidence of, you guys just don't see what I see. He's an offensive genius. Well, he looks like he doesn't know what he's doing out there.
No, and those guys are Einstein.
But hold on, Dave. Rewind that. You said you guys don't see what I see. I guess my question to Chris Johnson is, what is it that you see and why should we validate your opinion? I mean, it's clear you don't know what the hell you're looking at. I mean, you felt uncomfortable going through the coaching search unless you had a general manager, Mike McCagnan, who you were going to move on from several weeks after you made the hire. So let's admit that you don't know what you're doing. I think that's the first part of this that we gotta nail down before this Jets program can move forward. Chris Johnson doesn't know what he's doing. He needs to hire people that do and empower them. And if Joe Douglas is going to be your general manager moving forward, then go ahead and give him the autonomy to make the best football decision, which would be at some point this year, moving off of Adam Gase as your head coach and starting the coaching search process. Like, to me, that has to be what it is.
But how are you going to do that now? You just came out and doubled down on how great this guy actually is.
Well, Dave, didn't we see it a couple of years ago with Ben McAdoo when the Giants ownership came out and said, we're not going to fire the coach in the middle of the season, and then they fired the coach in the middle of the season? That happened. So, I mean, that's just talk. He's just putting that out there to try to put out some of the fires that are going on after that debacle that happened in Buffalo. But in looking at this situation right now, Adam Gase is not the right guy for this job. And all you needed to see was what happened in Buffalo on Sunday. All the talk we got this offseason was, okay, what we saw in the second half of 2019 was more of what the Jets were going to be in 2020 and moving forward. They were going to carry that momentum from the second half of last year into the beginning of this season. And guess what? You got stopped cold by the Bills. There was no momentum. They looked disorganized. They looked unprepared. That was a team that wasn't ready to play. And that's on the head coach. You can talk about all the talent issues that the Jets have, and they do need to improve the talent level. That's a real thing. But in terms of the penalties, the miscues, the blown coverages, like all of those things fall on the head coach. That's his responsibility. That's what we're seeing. So when Chris Johnson says, I wish you guys could see what I see, it doesn't matter what you see at practice. It matters what the players take to the game. And what I saw was an undisciplined, unprepared football team. There's no way he can excuse that.
No, he can't. But again, it's his first decision. And let's face it. If someone doesn't really know what they're looking at, period, because they're not qualified to do it, and they, you know, now all of a sudden Adam Gase becomes his football guy. So anything Adam Gase tells him, he believes. I mean, that's what
Adam Gase is a hell of a salesman, man. He really is. Like, when he gets fired from the Jets, the NFL should hire him and allow him to do a seminar on how to get a head coaching job for all of the candidates out there. I'm serious. I don't know what he told Chris Johnson in that meeting, but, like, whatever he said to get a job after a couple of weeks of being on the street after you got fired, like, that's impressive.
What would have to happen for Chris Johnson to look at Adam Gase and say, you know what, it's just not working out. Like if what we've seen so far is, well, he's an offensive genius, what would actually have to happen for him to look at things and say, no, this is not exactly what I'm looking for? To have negative yards in a game? To punt it on third down all the time? Like, what would have to happen?
I think they had a game last year. I think there was the game up in New England where they had 133 total yards of offense. I don't know how you can prepare for six days for an NFL game and have 133 yards of offense. I don't care if it's the backup quarterback. He's still an NFL player. 133 yards of offense from your offensive guru? Come on, man.
Like, yeah,
you got to look at it for what it is. Adam Gase is not good at his job. He's not. And you got to hold him accountable as such. 17 games is enough of a sample size from Adam Gase coming off of the 3 years of Miami to realize that he ain't your guy.
Yeah, but let's not pretend like we haven't seen decisions like this made before. I mean, you're sitting here trying to like go, what could Chris Johnson see? I mean, what did Jeff and Fred see in Brody Van Wagenen to make them believe that he was going to be good at the job? Nothing.
Well, how's that worked out?
It hasn't.
Right. We're
comparing it to the Mets.
Yeah, but I was trying to figure out where we were going.
No, but it happens. I'm not saying it should happen. I've seen it. I've witnessed it happen. I lived it. I watched it happen. Charles bought the team. He was a basketball guy, not a hockey guy. And then Mike Milbury was the GM. He taught Charles hockey. So anything that Mike told him, because he didn't know, he would believe. Because that's, I mean, that was his guy. That was the guy who was going to teach him about hockey. Like if I all of a sudden bought an NBA team, I love basketball and I watch it. You could take the worst coach in the NBA, sit him in my office, and he starts going X's and O's, I'm probably going to end up buying into it. Because he's talking a different language than me. And if I like him, oh, I like this guy. I feel like I can trust this guy. Maybe I make the ridiculous decision to hire him. Was Chris Johnson equipped to make this kind of decision?
But even if you make the wrong decision, you're a bright enough guy that when the results are so apparently horrible that you might adjust your belief of what he is, no?
He's riding and dying with this decision.
Oh, my God.
It might be his last decision, Dave. Put it all into context, too. When Woody comes back, who do you think is going to be making the decisions?
I think Woody will make the decisions.
Oh, exactly right. So, I mean, what are you going to do? Just all of a sudden, 17 games in, say, you know what? Bad decision by me. Terrible decision. So my only decision was a horrendous decision. It's not in the best interest of the Jets, but not every owner makes decisions in the best interest of their team. A lot of them make what's in the best interest of them.
Well, I don't know how this is in the best interest of him.
He doesn't want to admit that he made a terrible decision. He looks like we already suspect he doesn't know what he's doing. This would just confirm to everyone he has no idea what he's doing.
Well, I think that's obvious by now. Like, I don't even think
I don't know what to say at this point.
Well, there isn't anything to say, Dave. We're just going to sit back and watch how bad it is. Because if you thought it was bad on Sunday against the Bills, what do you think it's going to look like this Sunday with the 49ers coming off of a loss?
They're a little banged up. Let's be positive. They're a little banged up.
Yeah, George Kittle may not play. Not going to practice.
Do they need George Kittle to beat the Jets?
Probably not.
They already let receivers one ride open in their secondary. I don't think they need George Kittle. Not for this game. But it's bad, and it's only going to get worse from here because guess what? The players know when the owner has to come out and do something like that, it's show for the rest of the season.
It's awful. To be sitting here after week one and to be having this discussion is awful. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Good morning, fellas. How are you? I tell you, all the years, I'm 66 years old, and all the sports and pretty much the last 45 years been football. I've never seen where an owner of a team after one game has to come out and make excuses. And, this goes all the way back to the poor decision that they made when they let Tannenbaum go and they kept Rex and they brought in Idzik. They put a coach with a general manager who didn't want him in the first place. And ever since then, since that move, this has been spiraling out of control. And you know what? They went so many routes. They went with Wolf and they went with Cassidy. He brought in his buddies. That failed. Previous to that, I think when they brought in Idzik, that Kornhauser or whatever that business group they had to hire people, that didn't work out. And now turns out, to me, it has the way the structure is set up in the organization. And a lot of teams do this, but I think for the Jets, it just doesn't work. Where the coach and the general manager are on par and they report to the owner. It can't be that way. You need to hire a general manager. If you hire Joe Douglas, he's your general manager. He needs to pick the coach. And unfortunately, this is the situation they are right now. It's definitely headed in the wrong direction. But just as a fan, I just can't believe after one week I have to have the owner come out and make excuses. Just let this thing play out. And then guess what? At the bye week, if you're 1-7, you make your decision and you either move on or you finish out the year with them. But, we have Greg Williams sitting in the woods. If you have to make him the interim coach in the middle of the season, that's what you have to do. And then if you hire Joe Douglas, you gave him a six-year contract, if you're going to move on from Gase, you let Douglas make the hire. And you change the way the organization is set up structurally. The GM is
They're not going to change it. Ira, there is no way they're going to change the way that they're set up structurally.
Well, if they don't change it, they will never have success that way. Because you see, it's been a 10-year run. It doesn't work.
Well, I don't think anyone can argue with you. I mean, listen, we've said this for how many years? We didn't like how the front office was set up.
It's ridiculous the way it's set up.
No, I don't disagree with you. And I mean, then them trying to, you know, have these arranged marriages with coaches and GMs. I mean, it doesn't work. I mean, what should have happened was, and I get he was uncomfortable, but if there was any thought you were going to fire Mike McCagnan and you didn't trust him, the first to go, I mean, they should have just cleaned house. McCagnan's gone, coach is gone. Find your new GM, because it should go owner, GM. If you want to have a president, I guess you can have a president. So owner, president, GM, and then coach.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it should work. But now all of a sudden you put yourself in a situation, and I don't know how close the relationship is. This is what kind of muddies the waters between Joe Douglas and Adam Gase. Like, does Joe Douglas feel like he owes Adam Gase for getting him this job? I don't know how that dynamic works.
But if it continues to look the way it's looked on Sunday, there's no way that Joe Douglas can continue to stand by Adam Gase. Like, if it's as bad as it was against the Bills and it continues to be that throughout the course of the season, there is no way that Joe Douglas will retain Adam Gase as the head coach going into 2021.
No.
I don't care how close the relationship is. I don't care if he feels like he owes him the world. It's not going to happen.
Well, you lose credibility.
Like, they will move on from Adam Gase.
Like, Joe Douglas will lose his credibility.
Exactly.
If he stands.
And when you're starting your career as a general manager and knowing that these guys typically don't get a second chance, there's no way that Joe Douglas is going to stake his career and bet on Adam Gase when Adam Gase hasn't given you anything tangible to hold on to as a head coach.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Not in 17 games he hasn't.
Yeah, so it just makes sense for them to move off of him.
Yep. All right.
I don't know ESPN when that's going to happen this season, but it's going to happen.
Rightfully so. The Jets fan is very upset, and I don't blame them. Let's get to them and hear what they have to say. Let's go to Val in the Bronx. Val, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, good morning. And thank you so much for playing that soundbite from Greeny, because it's about time that people get some real numbers and facts in their face. When Gase's name came up for the hire in the first place, I was like, why are we bringing in a guy who has a losing record and just got fired? You saw it on Sunday. Three and out. And he's standing on the sidelines like he has no idea what's going on. He is so consumed with the problems he's having on offense that he can't even watch any other part of the game. And he's killing our defense. Time of possession, we lose it. Like, you can't have them guys out there for that long and expect them to do anything or be effective. It's a big, big problem. And the only thing that I feel good about with the fact that Johnson came out and said something is that maybe he actually watched all of the game. Maybe he actually listened to a few radio shows on Monday and heard what everybody was saying.
But Val, didn't sound like that. It sounded like just the opposite. He thinks that this guy's an offensive guru and he's not going anywhere.
Maybe he's just trying to say that just to try to see if he could salvage whatever he can. Unfortunately, though, I mean, this is one game. And you know what really bothers me about it? Everybody keeps saying, like Schechter said this morning, calm down, it's the first game of the season. This is the only team that you were planning for. There was no preseason. There was no, like, none of that happened this year. So all you had to do was focus on Buffalo. And then you want to tell me that because of COVID and stuff like that, you have to understand, how come Buffalo looked so much more ready for the game than we did? I watched the Giants lose on Monday night, and yeah, they lost. But, you know, watching that game, they did not look – you don't hear anybody calling in and saying the stuff that they're saying about the Jets, about the Giants. Because even though they lost that game, they did not look as – we looked like we just – somebody just dropped us on earth and said, you know what, tomorrow you're playing a game. That's pathetic. For the amount of time that he had to prep for that, the guy –
Well, it's week one, right? I get it. Listen, I get it's week one, right? And you play – I mean, there's 17 weeks, you play 16 games. I get it's week one, but there's something to be said about how it looked, right? And it didn't look good. It looked like your team – wasn't prepared. You saw a bunch of the same mistakes you saw last year, and it looked like they quit, like the game was over. And I think that's part of the reason why the owner had to come on and say what he said. Just to reemphasize to the guys inside of that locker room, the coaching staff, that this is my guy. So you may not like him, but
the owner
likes him, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, the fact that you feel like you need to do that after the first game of the season, though, that lets everybody know that even you're starting to hear some of the criticisms, and maybe that could be affecting your commitment to Adam Gase as well. Like, to me, like, him coming out and saying that does more harm than good. And it's going to create more controversy, and that's going to bring more questions from the players, from the coaches, the media members. Like, everybody is going to start second-guessing whether or not, you know, Adam Gase is long for the Jets. I mean, it's been our opinion since day one, since they hired him. We didn't think that this was probably going to work out, but in terms of the organization's commitment to him and the players listening to him and the other coaches listening to him, I just, with this comment from Chris Johnson, man, I think it undermines Adam Gase to a degree. And so I look at this season and I say this is probably going to get a lot more dysfunctional before Chris Johnson is forced to admit that he made the wrong decision when he made this hire a year ago.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I think that's what's going to have to happen for him to actually make the decision.
How could it get more?
Yeah, the worst thing that happened to the Jets was the second half of last year. That was the worst thing that could have happened.
Because it gave hope. You know what I'm saying? It gave hope and confidence, and maybe this guy's not what a lot of people think he is. I think you're right. I think if they would have gone 2-14 and hit rock bottom, maybe you wouldn't be in this situation right now.
And Sam Darnold would be all the better for it. That's the part of this that really bothers me, Dave, because in the middle of this, you're trying to develop your quarterback in his third season, and we know how critical of a year this is for Sam. And he's going to be with a head coach that doesn't seem like he knows what he's doing, and he's going to be a part of all the criticisms that come Adam Gase's way, directly or indirectly. Like, people can say, well, Adam Gase isn't a good coach. He doesn't know what he's doing. He ends up getting fired. But if Sam doesn't show tangible signs of being your franchise quarterback, the organization is probably going to pivot and go in another direction next offseason. And this is a guy that you used a third overall pick on in 2018. So I just that's the part of it that really bothers me, because it feels like the Jets are on this treadmill of mediocrity, and they don't have to be.
At this point, I would take mediocre.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know that they're mediocre.
Yeah, but see, the whole notion this is only week one, I get it. I understand that. But, I mean, you're only going off of what you've seen from, you know, this team and this head coach. And last year, I mean, it was a devastating. I mean, week one last year, you had a 16-point lead. C.J. Mosley leaves, and you end up losing that game. But, I mean, you saw how quickly things can spiral out of control. And that's the last thing I want to have happen again, is that, you know, we get, you know, a month into the season, and the Jets haven't won a game, the team's completely given up, and the Jets remain irrelevant. No one wants to see that. And that'd be the worst thing for your quarterback. I mean, that's, again, because now all of a sudden you're going to be put in a situation where you may have to make a decision. That if you actually, I mean, were a competitive team, you wouldn't have to make. Like, can you imagine having to make that decision?
It's more likely than not that we're heading down that road you just described.
Doesn't it feel like that? Does.
No, that's exactly what it feels like. It feels like Sam Darnold's going the way of Ryan Tannehill at this point.
He's going to have to get away from the organization in order to have success?
Yeah, well, the most success he'll have is in a different team.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy.
Because honestly, what happens, Chris? What happens? Like, can Jacksonville offer you, like, if God forbid the Jets have the worst record in the NFL and get the first overall pick, can Jacksonville offer you enough to not take Trevor Lawrence?
No. No, I don't think it's
possible.
Franchise-changing draft pick.
Man. Now, you're going to put Trevor Lawrence in the same exact situation you put Sam Darnold in, but hopefully he'll have the head coach and general manager be in lockstep when they make that decision.
If they wind up with the number one pick, they're taking Trevor Lawrence. If they wind up with the number one pick, they're taking Lawrence, and you'll have a head coach, and that would actually be an attractive job for a minute.
And you're going to sell Sam Darnold for pennies on the dollar.
Correct.
That's what it'll be.
That's correct.
A mid-round draft pick.
Well, you know what? That would be the situation you're forced into.
Yeah, but I understand
but you didn't have to be forced into that situation. That's the part to me that's so frustrating, and I don't understand why Jets fans aren't infuriated by it. Like, this didn't have to be what it was. If you knew you were going to go the direction of drafting a young quarterback, then why not go get the young, innovative head coach then to help develop the quarterback and to help sell the new foundation for what your team would be, rather than saddle a head coach that's on the hot seat with a rookie quarterback and have competing agendas? Why go down that road? That's not going to end well. It doesn't end well for anybody that makes that decision. So why would you do that if you're Chris Johnson?
I don't understand why people that aren't Jets fans that cover the NFL are surprised that Jets fans are reacting the way that they're reacting after that first week, after what we've seen.
Well, I think that's the only way you can react.
Yeah, no, I know, but I mean, Shefty said it's only week one. No, I mean, but people are surprised. Like, Shefty was like, hey, Greeny, relax, it's only week one.
Well, it's easy to say. Greeny's lived this for 50 years.
Yeah, but take the 50 years out of it. I get it. I mean, it's been painful, but just the last 17 games has been painful.
Awful.
We keep pointing to the 6-2. The season was over.
Over.
The season
over. You're beating teams that were awful. You beat the Buffalo Bills, who basically handed you the game. That was not a legitimate 6-2.
No, and more importantly, you lost to
a carryover. Look at this, Dave. Carryover was nothing.
Dave, you lost to an 0-7 Miami Dolphins team and an 0-11 Cincinnati Bengals team.
And you weren't even competitive in that game.
I mean, what are we talking about? And then you show up week one and you don't even, I mean, the game is, I mean, that game was over before it started.
It was over in the first quarter.
So I don't understand how you could be surprised that Jets fans are reacting the way that they're reacting.
I think this is the way that you should react, to be honest. I'd be furious. Ron in Queens. Ron, you're next up on 98.7.
Gentlemen, I'm listening to you guys talk, and, like, my head is, like, just pounding. So I'm a Mets and a Jets fan. And like, the similar – yes, exactly. The similarities are, like, striking, right? The over-arrogance of Brody and Gase. Like, the way that they sell you really, really high in the beginning of a season to really kind of, like, you know, just to fool you just one more time that this is going to be different. And then as soon as the product hits the field, it's absolutely trash, as it's always been. And I'm getting even more concerned about Darnold because I'm listening to him talk in his interviews, and he sounds like a battered wife. Like, he sounds like Gase is beating him up so much in the locker room and in the film room that he doesn't really know what to do. And I'm overly tired. It's not just 17 games. It's been all these years in a row. And in all seriousness, I know Rothenberg will call me a fraud. I actually wanted them to score 28 by the end of the first half. I needed it to be as bad as it could have possibly been. So somebody in that office could say, we got to get this dude out of here. I can't take it anymore, man. I just can't take it anymore.
Ron, he's going nowhere, man. I mean, you heard the owner come out yesterday and give him the biggest, you know, vote of confidence, seal of approval you could possibly have.
Yeah, but things change. Come on. I mean, you're talking about a team that said we
didn't
sign.
Why would you say it, Rick?
Well, we didn't sign Odell to trade him. You traded Odell.
And you looked ridiculous.
Exactly right.
And so, people still make fun of it. So why would
don't
you come
go dragging
week
the Giants
one?
Into this, Rick? No, I see what you're trying to do. Don't drag us into your dysfunction.
Because he's trying to save the season, Dave. He made this decision. This is on him. This was the decision that he made. This was not, you know, him and the GM decided, yeah, this was the best guy for the job. It was him making this decision, and then he let Gase talk him into firing Mike Maccagnan, which is fine. Not when he did it. I mean, the fact that he let Mike Maccagnan draft your players and then spend all that money just makes no sense. But I remember saying it at the time. This is, you're going into year two of Sam Darnold. This could be the most important offseason since you've owned the team. Because everyone felt like Sam Darnold was going to be that guy. And we've seen over the last, how many years have we seen it now? Where rookie quarterback that had substantial playing time, take Pat Mahomes out of it because he's in the perfect situation. He's just that. He's generational, right? But how many times have we seen it? Rookie quarterback plays early. Second year takes that huge jump. We see it every single year, don't we?
So with Eli.
Yeah.
No, but we see even recently, most recently we've seen it every single year. Carson Wentz, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray.
Like, you see it every single year.
Yep.
That was the most important offseason since you've owned the team, and you screwed it up. And now you're paying the price for it. Because not one Jets fan wants to hear, we're still in year three of your rookie quarterback, when it's supposed to be the most beneficial time for you as an organization because you're not paying your quarterback any money, that we're still rebuilding in his third year? Come on, man.
Right. And maybe getting worse. And maybe
not
getting
maybe.
Worse than it's ever been.
Not maybe. It's only going to get worse. Because now if you have to fire Adam Gase, now you're talking about third coach, third system for your quarterback going into his fourth year. Now you're the Browns.
But let's face it, you're not that
with
far
less
from
talent.
It.
Not,
you're
talent.
Not that far from it in terms of your organization and your structure. You're not far from it.
Nope.
And so something has to change. And to me, the first step would be Chris Johnson admitting that he made a mistake with hiring Adam Gase.
I feel like we're at a
recognize
a
that you don't
right
know
now.
What you're doing. Allow Joe Douglas, the football person, who's your general manager, to do what he does and go through the coaching search and find somebody that can help be a part of getting this thing turned around.
Hi, I'm Rick, and I'm a Jets fan.
Hi, Rick.
Can't you just explain that straight out of a meeting? The only way to solve this is to admit you actually have a problem first, and then we can actually fix the problem.
No, tell us.
Well, how the hell are you going to fix a problem if you're not willing to admit it's a problem?
Well, the owner yesterday told you it's not a problem. It's going to be fine. No worries. Hang tight.
But him coming out and saying that though, Dave, it's a problem. After week one? I got to ask this question because I don't know. I truly don't know. Have we ever heard an owner after week one come out and give his coach a vote of confidence or an endorsement?
You shouldn't have to.
But that's what I'm saying. Has it ever even happened? I don't know that it's happened. Like, the Jets are making history here. Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Like that's ever happened. They're making the wrong kind of history.
This Wingfoot Golf Course right now is...
What's happening?
Dude, I mean, I'm telling you right now.
Treacherous?
Dude, I mean, between the rough...
Treacherous?
The greens aren't even dry yet in their lightning. Like, me and Canty, this would be... I mean, you may quit golf. If Canty and I were playing this, the way the course is set up now, like at the turn, me and Canty probably look at each other and go, hey, you know what?
I'm all set. We're all set, set on this.
Let's
one.
Go grab a beer. We can be done.
You know who played really well on that course, Rick? Terry Collins. I did not know he was that kind of golfer.
Yeah, he did play well. This is a whole different.
I didn't know he was that kind of golfer. Hell of a golfer.
He's a good dude too. I like talking. We had that was a nice conversation we had with him.
The further you get away from Terry Collins, the more you appreciate the ability of Terry Collins, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, this is another one of those situations where, and I remember this is stuck with me the entire time. They were asking about when Sandy got fired. Numerous people said some of the best things that Sandy Alderson did, you would never know about it because it involves saying no to Jeff.
You think?
Because that's
I can see that.
You don't get a chance to see that.
Of
you know
course.
What I mean?
And like then you let people like that run wild, and now you see where we are.
Why? Well, because owners that like to run wild like that, they usually hire people that are going to allow them to run wild.
Which is why Chris Johnson hired Adam Gase?
Yes.
Well, exactly right. I mean, you think Matt Rhule was, I give Matt Rhule tons of credit. You want to hire me, you want me to leave college, which I'm happy to stay in college, then I'm going to need to be in charge of my own staff. That's how this is going to work.
And the only thing left is human sacrifice.
Get more time.
That might be.
To listen to our show by going to Shell and getting three things done at once. First, fill up with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus. Then save up with Fuel Rewards Program. Finally, snack up to save even more at the pump. Make the most of the stop you need to make with Shell. Let's go to Chris in Wausau. Chris, you're next up on 98.7.
How's it going, DCR? It's my first time catching you guys at the new time slot. My bad.
No.
I apologize for that.
You need to know better, Chris. It's 8:55 to 11 o'clock in the morning. Mark it down.
I've been dropping the ball. That's why I wanted to apologize right off the rip.
All right, we got you.
But the whole Adam Gase thing and the Jets, it took me three plays to realize the season was over with the checkdowns and the screens to Chris Hogan. How are you going to run a screen to Chris Hogan when Brashad Perryman's on the other side? That doesn't make sense. The guy says after the game he wouldn't change any of his plays. Genius.
I didn't like that.
Going up against the 49ers. Oh, you finally got you realize you're playing a good defense? Like, what are you saying? He ruined Sam. And I've been saying this for a while, and it stinks, but we cannot go into next year with Sam and a new coach. We have to trade Sam while we can still get something for him. If we go till the draft of the offseason, we're getting a fifth for him.
You can't trade him now, Chris.
But no,
Chris, we got to work on your cardio, Chris.
He's completely out of breath.
Being a Jets fan is miserable. Being a Jets fan is miserable. I can't even think about like what's going to be good because the only thing good for the Jets is to tear it down because you don't retool something that wasn't good in the first place.
But it's torn down. How much more tearing do you want to do?
We have some pieces. We'll keep May, and that's about it. And then we trade the guys like Williamson and Bell for mid-rounders by that deadline. You fire Gase by the fourth week.
What you're talking about doing, man, and you're talking about demo. This isn't tearing. This is demo. I mean, when you draft a quarterback with a third overall pick, you trade what you traded, and it was a good deal that they made. I mean, and it doesn't work out. I mean, you're setting yourself back years. Years. It's a terrible situation. I mean, let's face it.
It's awful. But you can't make it worse. You can't trade Sam Darnold. Even if you do want to take a quarterback, he plays out the year, and then you move in a different direction. Well, trade him now.
But this is what happens, though, Dave. We all want what teams like, you know, Baltimore has, what Pittsburgh has. Like, we all want that, what New England has. We all want that continuity. But when you put, you know, when you have a situation where, you know, you bring in a new GM that didn't draft your quarterback, and he's got a 6-year deal, and you know he's on a different schedule than the fan base. You're gonna be put in situations like this. If Joe Douglas had drafted Sam Darnold, and the Jets have a terrible season, and you have a high pick, he's probably not going to draft another. I would imagine he's probably not going to draft another quarterback.
Probably not going to happen.
But no, now that, right. that there is that temptation though, because Sam Darnold's not his guy.
Not his guy.
And if they bring in a
frustrating
new coach,
part about it. Yeah.
Well, and you know, Chris, if they bring in a new coach, part of what you'd be selling to that coach is, hey, do you like Sam Darnold? not really. I kind of like Trevor Lawrence. You know what I mean? Like that becomes a conversation.
Right. And then we'll get
But here's the problem with Sam Darnold, though. You don't know what he is because you've had an incompetent coach the last two seasons. If Adam Gase is allowed to play out 2020. That's the part of it that to me is frustrating, because coming out, you could make an argument that Sam Darnold was the most talented quarterback in that class. And you had the foresight to be able to move up from 6-3 to be in position to draft him.
Which we all thought was a brilliant move.
It was a brilliant move. Yep. I still stand by that, Dave. But then you've gone about systematically putting this kid in a bad spot where you stunt his growth and his development as a quarterback, and now you're going to potentially ruin whatever the kid had to offer at the NFL level. That's the thing that I still can't get past what Chris Johnson did in making that decision, because here's the thing. We don't know if Sam Darnold would have been capable of becoming a good franchise quarterback. We don't know, because you had somebody that you had a question mark about at the head coaching spot.
What he needed too, Dave, what he needed, and I think we all realize this at the time too, as talented as he was, has not played quarterback for that long.
No.
Like,
no,
tons of talent, but he's
in position. He is.
He needed, like, he needed continuity. Like, he needed stability.
Let's bring him in. Question time. Andy from Merrick. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Good morning, DCR. With the return of Big Ten sports, I have a four-pack of Big Ten basketball questions for you.
Oh, great.
Starting with, which Big Ten school has the most championships in the conference with 24?
Big Ten basketball championships? That's probably, it's Purdue, maybe? Purdue or Michigan, you'd have to think.
This is more, I mean, this is, Big Ten basketball has got to be more you than us.
How would you be going Big Ten basketball?
You had it. Come on, spit it out.
Is it Purdue?
It's Purdue.
All right.
Nice.
Nice, Dave.
All right. 1984, they instituted the Big Ten Player of the Year. Since then, there have been two guys who have won back-to-back Big Ten Player of the Year title. Name either of them.
84. Back to back. I think Steve Alford could have won it. Have someone won it? Frank Kaminsky? Denzel Valentine?
Not there yet. Come on.
We're not there. Jim Jackson.
Jim Jackson is one, Ohio State.
Nice, David.
Nice, Dave.
And is Mateen Cleaves the other?
Cleaves of Michigan State. Nicely done.
Okay.
Nicely done, Dave.
He is the only Big Ten men's basketball player to surpass 1,000 points in a single season. Who is he?
Wow.
1,000 points in a single season.
Is it Glenn Rice?
Oh, close. Not there.
Come on, David.
I thought you had that.
I'm supposed to be spitballing.
Glenn Robinson.
CeCe, my man.
There we go.
The big dog.
Big dog, yeah.
And finally, Big Ten Coach of the Year has been won by Bobby Knight 5 times, which ranks him number 2. Who is the Big Ten Coach of the Year 7 times over?
7 times. I wonder if Gene Cady could be the guy.
Don't wonder. You got it.
Yeah. There we go.
Wow, Dave. That is unbelievable.
What was the hair? The hair was the giveaway there.
Guys, 4 for 4. Stay healthy as always, and let's go, Islanders.
Not your best day. I'm going to be honest. We did good, but that was not your best day, Andy.
Yeah, Big Ten basketball. That's what we're doing.
Wouldn't you have figured that it would have been Big Ten football would have been the
top? That's
what
I would have thought.
Right? Yeah, not to mention the fact that Chris played football. I mean,
the fact that we get Big Ten football back yesterday and he calls with Big Ten basketball questions?
That's random.
Yeah, it's lazy. It's lazy.
Yeah. Well, it's an Islanders fan for you.
I don't know if that's lazy.
Break.
I think he's overthinking himself. You know, he's outthinking
himself.
Yeah,
too much thought.
Kind of like what Adam Gase does on the sidelines.
Oh, DCR
is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.